Welcome to this new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast by RFI English, produced and presented by me, Melissa Shemam. Twice a month, I look at some of the biggest issues on the African continent, one country or one ID at a time. After following the elections in Senegal and in South Africa, and the lack of elections in Mali, Niger and Burkina Faso, this week we are discussing the issue of reparations. The idea of reparations is gaining momentum in the global south, especially in the Caribbean and in Africa. This reparation, in the form of financial compensations, could be coming from former colonizers, for instance, towards former colonized countries. That's what activists say. They could come from different kind of perpetrators as well, towards different forms of victims, including reparation for slavery, for instance, or loss and damages in the case of climate injustice. In the context of the recent European elections, the coming parliamentary elections in France and in the UK, the question could be reframed and could come more strongly soon in the public debate and international negotiations. The African Union has also decided to make the issue of reparations a key one for the year 2025. To know more about if and how it could be done, what sorts of reparations are in demand, I spoke to Nassim Salad, who is a senior associate at the Advocacy Team, a consultancy group in public affairs. The group has collaborated with think tanks like the One Campaign and Development Reimagined, and it has recently produced a report to suggest how to come up with concrete financial plans for potential reparations.
Our work revolves around equity, and we do everything from supporting organizations with policy work and data research to strategy building, advocacy, and sometimes event management.
The theme of reparation has been really in the news recently. There are different cases regarding former colonized countries, Africa in general, but also Caribbean countries and other countries in the world. The African Union at their last summit has also put an emphasis on the needs to go forward on these issues next year in 2025. So when did the advocacy team start tackling this issue, and where are you at in terms of campaigning for it?
So we worked on it a couple of years ago for a client who was very interested in reparations. They were based in the Caribbean. We worked very closely with them alongside another British consultancy on reparations in particular. And when that project was finished, we decided to continue it for ourselves. My boss, Lorianne Robertson, is of Caribbean heritage. And a lot of the people that we work with at the advocacy team, including myself, I'm from an African background, colleagues from Asian background and North African backgrounds. I think collectively, this is something that we cared about. And we work, as I said earlier, on equity issues often. We develop the Equity Index, which assesses international development organizations on equity. But I think for us, we can establish that how can things be equitable within the international development sector and the world in general as it is right now without addressing this big idea of reparations. So we really thought about what is the case of reparations, and there's such a huge movement in the UK, lots of amazing grassroots organizations that already work on this and have been working about this for ages. We have international development financing backgrounds, and we thought, how could we apply our knowledge of development finance to reparations? And there's lots of discussions on why reparations should happen, but not much that we've seen on how it should happen. So that's really where our work on reparations came from. And that's where our report that we've done with Development Reimagined really has come from.
And so what is interesting is that it's focusing on how reparation could happen, financing reparation, loss and damages, what are the options? So please, can you take us through some of the findings?
The report in itself looks at 14 different financial mechanisms that could be used for reparations. Five of those have already existence, like debt cancellation, for example. And there's like 9 new innovative ideas, mainly around taxation, that we have implemented in the report. And each recommendation is scored across a criteria assessment. And there's 15 criteria assessments. I'm not going to go through them all, but they kind of look at things such as how effective would it be? How costly would it be? Is there political will? Does it take a long time? Those are the sort of things that we looked at in the criteria assessment. And we kind of like cross-assessed all 14 recommendations. And we've come up with 3 that were the most viable. and that scored the most highly. And the first of those was debt cancellation. Debt distress, particularly in countries in Africa, is something of real concern at the moment. And debt relief can free up a lot of resources and allow countries to spend their money on their own social sectors. So debt cancellation, we thought that's something that's already been done. That's something that can be easily done and can be seen as a form of reparations. And that's one of our top three recommendations. And the second one in particular was repurposing financial sanctions. Repurposing financial sanctions looks at the redistribution of assets and funds from perpetrators to recipients or victims. And there's a general lack of transparency on where financial penalties are held and who has the power to redistribute them. So I think Russia and Ukraine is a really good example of this. But these are penalties that can offer opportunities to pool funds. And there's a really interesting example in our report where it highlights a case study in Scotland where a Scottish company was fined, I think, £3 million for violations against UN sanctions that were imposed on them. And then the Scottish government used that fine to redistribute and channel that money back into projects that worked with the people in Iraq where the sanctions were in place. So that's a really good example of where that could be implemented. And the last one that we looked at was financial transaction tax, otherwise known as an FTT. And this one scored the highest amongst the criteria assessment, looking at all of our recommendations. And an FTT is essentially a tax that's applied to the purchase or sale of financial instruments, such as stocks or bonds. And the report itself looked at a really interesting figure. Whereas if you base on the $16 trillion that's being traded every single day on the global financial market, a moderate financial transaction tax at 0.1% could generate up to $16 billion. And there's an argument as to why that should be in place because the financial markets of today, arguably, were built on the backs of slavery and colonization, particularly from the UK in the 16th century merchant banking and insurance organizations and companies that were run. So that was another interesting one that we looked at and that did score quite highly in our assessment criteria for the report.
So when we look at all these mechanisms, they seem to be applicable to almost the whole planet. You also mentioned the context of colonialism, post-colonialism, and exploitation of some countries by others. So do you work with specific demands, and do you have a priority in terms of relations internationally, or?
I think for us, we really wanted to kind of steer clear on who should be demanding what, because, at the end of the day, yes, we might have backgrounds that come from different countries, but I was born and raised in the UK, as were most of my colleagues. We very much would respect and understand that the calls for what kind of reparations and how much and for what reasons should come from the people affected. So we're very conscious on not kind of putting a particular campaign or a number or a country or region on what the reparations should look like. So we very much came at it from a perspective, okay, well, we live in the UK, colleagues we've got based in the EU, what can the European Union and the British government do for reparations? And I think outside of the financing element, which can be applied to multilateral organizations as well, not just the UK and not just countries, so the World Bank and the IMF in particular, and then looking at debt, for example, we work closely with parliamentarians in the UK, Bel Rabiu Adi, who chairs the All-Party Parliamentary Group for African Reparations, and she's really been a leader politically on this, and we work very closely with her to try and highlight the issues of reparations. So hopefully she will be re-elected. Likewise, we worked with an MEP in the European Union who was trying to push through a legislation recognizing the crimes that Europe has done to African nations and the Caribbean nations. So I think for us, our first step is building a network from the grassroots perspective, but also politically, and then seeking acknowledgement, which I think is important to reparations, and some kind of apology, which it might be quite hard to get. And then sharing our research that we've done on practical financial mechanisms that countries and multilateral organizations can use in seeking reparations.
On the European perspective, the reception of this idea is very different from a country to another. If we take the Netherlands, Belgium, France, the UK, do you feel that one place could be a leader in terms of receiving your contributions, your ideas, your proposal, your research in terms of financing?
So we were invited to the EU Parliament last year by Pierrette Burgher-Fofana. She's an MEP and she really is interested in the idea of anti-racism, colonialism, and reparations. So for us, it was really interesting to go there and listen to what other people were saying from across the European Union. But from my understanding, this was an issue that may have had some sympathies across the left of the political scale in the European Union that wasn't gaining much traction. I think language was accepted, but maybe not any policy or financial mechanisms. So we know that there's going to be probably a right-wing insurgence of new MEPs. So we don't really know where that work is going to go and who's going to hold it. But that was particularly from a European Union like upper level. But in the UK, I mentioned Bel Rabea Addy, who is a Labour Party MP, and she's very, very keen on this topic, of course, and she's been leading on this for quite a long time. Where the UK stand on this in particular, the Conservative government in place before the election was called, really pushed through this anti-woke agenda. There's been a real division in politics from the left and the right, and everyone's moving, kind of pushing out left or right. And I think the Conservative government has become more right-wing in its thinking across the years. And obviously, reparations falls into that bucket. But the Labour Party in itself hasn't really spoken out about this. I think they've been quite quiet. The Shadow Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, has spoken in an international development and foreign secretary perspective that we should work with African countries a bit more. We should give them agency. They've been supportive of the Loss and Damage Fund, which I think is a de facto reparations fund for climate. And the UK has actually given 15 million towards that. The King recently acknowledged the crimes that the UK perpetuated in Kenya, but fell very short of apologizing for those. So yeah, it really depends. I mean, I probably hold pessimistic perspective on whether this is plausible, whether this is going to gain momentum. But I think people are probably a bit more open to it if we spoke about it differently. Like, I think language is important here.
We spoke about the how, but maybe I can also ask you about the whom. Like when we think of reparation, I think what's really divisive among population that are at least a little bit aware of the subject. Sometimes people feel threatened by who the money would go to. In the situation of the former enslaved African people, where the money from the UK's bank went to the slave owners and not the human being that were used. So do you agree that all these people are concerned, or do you think it's a matter of route, countries, campaigns? How do you see that issue of who is entitled to any form of reparation?
I think that's a really interesting question, and I'm glad that you brought up the slave owners being paid. The argument is to be made that, it took you that much and that long to pay off the slave owners, then where is your same contribution for the enslaved? I think the question on who should be getting it, I think it should come from those affected and those affected communities, and that's a conversation that people should have amongst themselves. I think it should be done on a case-by-case basis, and I don't think it should be done in one way. For example, debt cancellation will, of course, go to the country affected by debt, and those finances will depend on the government. But, we would make the safe assumption that it would be repurposed towards social sectors such as health and education. In terms of like a diaspora in the UK, there is an argument to be made around work that can be done in social sectors like education, health, diversity programs. I think there was a recommendation done, I want to say Cambridge University, where they looked at their historical past, particularly around slavery. And one of the suggestions that they came up with was to say, well, we could give scholarships to students from the Caribbean to attend Cambridge as a form of reparations, which I think is a really interesting way to look at it. So, yeah, I really think it's a case-by-case basis according to whether the institution that's given back, for example, banks, where they would put that money into the universities, how they can repurpose education as a form of reparations, countries, multilateral organizations. I think it's a very complicated, big thing. And you could have dedicated pots of money for different things. And I think, again, to raise loss and damage, that's a really good example because that's specifically for climate reparations. And we know where that will be and how quickly that will set up and how easily. So it can be done, but I think it has to, again, come from the people who are affected to come together and really consider what they need and how they can get it.
this idea of reparations is actually linked to every part of the economy. So you're right. There could be ways to include, in the way we do with climate change, this dimension to many forms of reflection on how we compete with each other, how we sustain our development. And I think next year would be an interesting one to maybe reevaluate the role of international financial institutions, 80 years of the World Bank and Monetary Fund. So brilliant. Thank you so very much. Maybe your last question is, where are you at, and who do you think are your best partners? Are you trying to campaign beyond the partners you already have to push this issue forwards? Maybe the best place for you, is it like UN tribunes or actually underground grassroots campaigning?
I think we're obviously new players into this, and there's been people who've been working this for many years. As I mentioned earlier, I really hope that Rabia Addy gets re-elected so we can work with her more closely and her parliamentary group around the work that they're doing on African reparations in the UK Parliament. Again, we're keeping in contact with Dr. Pires' office in the EU, in the European Union. Very keen to work with them a little bit further. I also wanted to highlight our partners on the report, Development Reimagined, who are an international development consultancy focused around Africa and China. And we work with them very closely, and we have a series of webinars coming up with them on different issues on reparations. So again, very keen to work with them quite closely and others in this space. Yeah.
Thank you so much for now.
Thank you so much. Yeah. And I think it's good that it moves slow, right? Because I think it gives time for people to think about it. And like I said, it's not one trick pony, not one fund that needs to happen. It's across different sectors, different countries, different levels of community and people who are affected. So it's really just a broad sect. And I think actually taking time on it and just having one step of acknowledgement and apology is a good way to start for me. Now the conversation has completely shifted because I think even everyone with their own eyes can see what's happening is not correct. But in the early days of the conversations, I do remember it being quite difficult. When people speak about reparations, well, particularly in the UK, reparations for slavery is one thing that comes up quite a lot. And our previous client, that's one thing they wanted to focus on, was like just slavery reparations. But we really had a thought and was like, well, actually, colonization was also not a great thing. And that covers a lot of countries. Obviously, slavery will be like mainly West Africa and the Caribbean, whereas colonization covers like more than like 50% of the world, right? So again, that goes to your point about who should have the reparations and where it should be placed. It depends on the perpetrator and what exactly you're calling for.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much.
This was Nassim Salad, a senior associate at the advocacy team. This was a new episode of Spotlight on Africa, a podcast produced by RFI English. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon to comment on the new coalition government in South Africa and more election on the continent. In the meantime, for more African and French news, go to our website, rfi.fr/en. Cheers!